For today, Mike and I have chosen a case from The Gateless Gate, a collection by Master Mumon from 13th century China. And the case, I'll read it to you. It's Ching Shui, Solitary and Destitute. A monk asked San Shan, "I am Ching Shui, solitary and destitute. Please give me alms." Cao Shan said, "Venerable Shui." And Ching Shui said, "Yes, sir." Cao Shan said, "You have already drunk 3 cups of the finest wine in China, and still you say that you have not moistened your lips." So, a brief encounter between a teacher and a very senior student at this point in the 9th century in China. And this koan has quite a history for me. When I was the head monk at a 3-week retreat, very long, arduous, at the end there's a ceremony where the head monk gets elevated to being a senior monk, a senior priest. And the ceremony involves everyone sitting in zazen, and then someone hands the head monk a koan. And the head monk has to give a talk about the koan right there. A koan that he or she hasn't seen before. And so there I was. And then there is what's called Dharma combat, where people come to the front and ask the head monk questions about the Dharma. And I knew this was coming. All 3 weeks I knew this was coming. And I was terrified. I was feeling solitary and destitute. Solitary because nobody else had to do this. It was just me. And I thought, everybody must know. You know, I have no clue what to do when they hand me a koan and tell me to give a talk immediately. And destitute. I was feeling like, I got nothing here. I have no idea what the koan's going to be and how am I going to make stuff up on the spot. This was truly one of my most terrifying moments of Zen training. And, of course, what I failed to realize, poor Bob, solitary and destitute, was that I was drinking 3 cups of the finest wine in China. Here I was, having sat with a dedicated group of Sangha mates, Dharma friends, for 3 weeks, all of whom were wishing me well and assuming that I had nothing to say. And of course, the ceremony proceeded. I opened my mouth. Something came out. I'm still not sure what. The Dharma combat was as loving as it could possibly have been, and it was a cause for great celebration of the Dharma and of these beautiful practices of sitting together. So this koan is a familiar kind of exchange between a student and a teacher, where we come saying, "I'm hurting. Life is so bad. I'm so bad. I'm in so much pain. Help me, please." And the teachers, and Mike and I have been guilty of this, say, "This magnificence is with us every moment. We are it. We are the magnificence." That life is full of richness. And of course, it's disconcerting because as students, we come to Zen because something's wrong. We're hurting. We don't come to this practice because everything's just fine. So what does it feel like when a teacher says, look at the magnificence? I've come to understand because of my work life that this is part of how we humans are. That the human mind actually is programmed to see what's wrong, to see what's solitary and destitute. And there's actually quite good research on this, that we pay more attention to what's wrong and we remember what's wrong much more than we pay attention to what's right, what's okay. And of course, that's thought to be an advantage because if we can anticipate threats, we're more likely to survive. And so in order to pass on our genes, that's supposed to be a good thing. But in terms of helping us appreciate the truth of life, it is a distortion. And practice helps us see through that distortion. So, solitary and destitute depends on our judgments, on the judging mind that we live with every moment, all day long. It depends on expectations of life and expectations of ourselves. It's different from just the awareness of life as it is. Sometimes I do a little exercise in my zazen and even off the cushion where I pay attention to the requirements I put on life. And that includes requirements on myself. And I realize that most of those requirements are all made up. They're completely without substance. So I knew I was going to talk about this today, so I woke up this morning earlier than I wanted to. And I found myself saying, oh, I woke up earlier than I wanted to. Where is it written that I'm supposed to wake up at the time I want to, right? One of my requirements, a slight moment of pain. And of course, this is minor compared to the real suffering in our lives. But I do this all day long. I looked at my watch, and in fact, I didn't achieve the number of steps I wanted to achieve yesterday. I only had 9,000 steps instead of 10,000. Destitute. How much of our life are mental and emotional life is filled with those requirements. Requirements that I be included in this group, that I be recognized by that person, that I receive this acknowledgement or this gift. All made up and all making us feel solitary and destitute. And so we annoying teachers, all of you included, are here to remind ourselves and each other of the richness that's with us in every moment. Yes, my knee aches right now, and the air is warm, and there's snow coating the world in a beautiful way outside the window. All there, nothing left out. All to be held. And so, we see through this solitary and destitute. In our reading today, it speaks of this, a reading that I didn't really understand when I first came to Zen, because it speaks to this very thing. How boundless and free is the sky of samadhi? How bright the full moon of wisdom? Truly, is anything missing now? Nirvana is right here before our eyes. And with that, I'm going to turn the talk over to another piece of Nirvana, Mike Fielke.
So, as Bob mentioned, Ching Shui in this moment is a pretty senior monk, and in the sense, what we mean by that is just has been practicing for a while. And comes and to his teacher and says, "I am Ching Shui, solitary and destitute." So there are many different ways of hearing that. Probably the one that jumps to mind most quickly for us is the place that we all enter every so often when we've only taken 9,000 steps, when we are feeling alone in the world, when we feel like we're not meeting expectations of ourselves, perhaps when we feel that the world has abandoned us, when we have a very strong sense of ourselves based on whatever information we have chosen to highlight in that moment in our narrative mind. And that strong sense of ourselves is feeling terribly lonely. Feels like it has nothing of value. What a rich opportunity for practice when we enter these difficult places. One way of practicing with these types of states is to change our attention, to notice what else is present. A very skillful form of practice that often can put into perspective our stories. And as we continue to sit, we may not need to even necessarily do this consciously. We just sit on the cushion and notice that our story about ourselves and about our lives is just a story that is passing through our mind. It doesn't make it wrong. We're not arguing with it. But we also notice the scent of incense, the pressure in our knees, snow falling all around, everywhere, gently. And we might put into perspective our story. Not even through our own activity, just through the activity of Zazen. Or perhaps we get sucked down into a whirlpool of vast darkness. This too sometimes happens. And the teaching is that this too is the Dharma manifesting. Perhaps we have our preferences and would prefer that it not show up in that way, but sometimes it does. And the more that we encounter these states, we don't even need to tell ourselves this. The more clearly they appear to be without fixed substance. The feelings in the body shape-shift and change. The thoughts come and go. And we begin to see even our most difficult moods as just kind of like rainbows or constellations. Just mental formations. Unfortunately, we really can't tell ourselves this in the midst of such an experience. It's not really helpful to argue with ourselves. Whatever we say to ourselves makes whatever we're experiencing rise up in defiance. So it's not particularly helpful to argue with whatever's arising in my experience. But this quality of compassionately bearing witness has enormous power for the way. Perhaps we experience even our own suffering with a kind of tenderness and sweetness and love and care, the care of Zazen. And in being met in this way, like when we get to express ourselves fully, something softens. Something begins to open. There's another way of hearing this koan. Ching Shui, solitary and destitute, perhaps as a somewhat more senior practitioner, is saying and bragging, "Look, I've got nothing. Look at how empty I am." We've probably heard before of this practice of poverty, spiritual poverty being the path. We read our five remembrances, and four of them are about the way everything is impermanent. Even our actions are impermanent. Everything shape-shifting, changing, nothing to hold on to, no identity that I get to claim as mine in any way that is enduring. And we experience this over and over in our lives. And at some point, that insight burrows in pretty deep. And we realize that a great source of our suffering can be our clinging. Clinging to things that are ever changing. Clinging to my youthful body as it changes into an older body. Clinging to knowledge that slips out of my mind like a sieve. Clinging to roles that vanish. Clinging to life itself in the face of life and death. King Ching Shui comes along and says, "Look, I've let go of everything." So it may be that the teacher in this moment is also pointing out a little bit of an attachment to that aspect of the Dharma. The aspect that encourages us to see impermanence as a Dharma gate. Why? Because the medicine we often need is opening the hand of thought, is a willingness to let go. Because we suffer when we cling. That's the ancient teaching. But then we can cling to letting go. Isn't that ironic? Oh, I'm nothing. We can actually slip into a kind of nihilistic place if we overemphasize that side of the Dharma. So the teacher says, "Hey, Ching Shui, and notice his response. No longer moo, no longer no. He steps forth and says, yes. This too is our practice. Yes. Yes, this. This moment here and now, receiving with a wide open heart. We're able to receive this because we aren't clinging to the past, to ideas about ourselves. So these two go hand in hand, this openness, this receptivity, in a sense, this lack of control, the lack of there being a self at the center managing the universe. And when we let ourselves be destitute in this way, the finest wine arises. Your life, just as it is, moment after moment, this breath, this sensation, this sound, this story, this sadness, this depression, this joy. Nothing to fear, nothing to hold on to. The magnificence of life itself.